terms of a definition of obstructive sleep apnea, it really affects your upper airway. People with sleep apnea have an abnormal airway that's more collapsible, which is usually inherited. What we do when people have a sleep test is count the number of times the airway partially or fully collapses, and then that comes up with an index, which is how many times that happens per hour of sleep, and there are normal and abnormal values for those breathing issues during the night. So that if you have more than 5 abnormal breathing events per hour of sleep where your airway is partially or fully collapsing, then you meet the criteria for a diagnosis of obstructive sleep apnea.
And we would recognise that in the sense of snoring, what we call snoring?
Snoring is, I guess, the commonest symptom, especially in adults, that suggests that you may have obstructive sleep apnea. I mean, most of the information we get is from relatives, either the parents or the bed partner. And so if you've got significant sleep apnea, the bed partner usually notices that you have periods where you don't seem to be breathing. What happens is you're trying to breathe, but if your upper airway is totally collapsed, no air can go in and out, so there's no noise. And at the end of that, you often make a choking noise and then start snoring again. So the periods that we're most worried about is when you're not snoring, because that's when your airway is totally collapsed and you can't snore.
Does that mean that air can't get in through either the mouth or the nose?
No, because the upper airway is totally collapsed at those times. And then the person often makes a choking sound or cough, and then the airway, they have a subconscious arousal with every abnormal breathing event, and the period where they have that arousal is their nerves and muscles increase activity so that their airway opens up again. But if you have hundreds of abnormal breathing events per night, you're effectively waking up hundreds of times a night to protect yourself. So what protects you is at the cost of a good sleep.
So you're not getting the REM sleep that you need?
Well, the deep sleep and REM sleep. REM sleep especially, because in REM sleep, which is in dreams, you're paralysed, except for breathing and your eyes. And so your airway is more collapsible in REM sleep than other sleep. And so that's why in most people with sleep apnea, especially adults, their longest dream period is at 3 to 4 in the morning. And so for most people, that's when their sleep apnea is at its worst.
What are some of the signs, some of the signals for people to look out for in terms of sleep apnea?
Well, loud snoring. So 50% of people with loud snoring will have sleep apnea. They're often hot sleepers, and that's because if you're not breathing properly, you release adrenaline, and that makes you sweat and get hot in your sleep. They often thrash around. There may be periods where they're noted not to be breathing. These are mostly things that bed partners or parents would notice. What the person involved would notice definitely is when they wake up in the morning, they don't feel refreshed and their sleep is never refreshing. And as the sleep apnea gets worse in adults over time, then that will usually start to impact in the daytime in terms of tiredness, feeling sleepy. It will affect their temperament, their working memory, things like that will be gradually affected if it's allowed to run its course over time, which in adults mostly it tends to steadily get worse over time.
So do things like going to bed earlier help?
No, they don't. Because the problem is when you're asleep. The only reason why going to bed earlier would help is if people aren't getting enough hours of sleep. So that there are various things that can make it worse. If you're getting an inadequate number of hours of sleep, if you're overtired, stressed, things like that, then because sleep apnea will vary from night to night. The other things that do make it worse that are common in people are drinking too much alcohol, smoking, inadequate exercise, and putting on weight. The first person that's adequately described as having sleep apnea is Dionysius in ancient Greece. He was an extremely overweight, wealthy Greek man who had his own personal physicians. And they describe where he stopped breathing and went blue in his sleep regularly. Their method of treatment was to stick needles into his abdomen so that he was roused and breathe again. Ultimately, it failed because he ended up with so much scar tissue that sticking needles into him didn't rouse him anymore, and he died.
But did he die from the sleep apnea?
Yes, he died from the sleep apnea.
And so what I'm hearing is that people do die from sleep apnea.
Yes. It's not often that it's recorded on their death certificate, though. But, I mean, you know, people put death during sleep down to all sorts of things. Sleep apnea is usually not considered as part of it, but clearly it can be.
Why isn't it something that is discussed?
I think the problem is that because you're asleep, and so it doesn't get noticed as regularly. Your colour can change regularly during the night, and obviously people don't notice it because you're sleeping in the dark. The person who's doing it is usually blissfully unaware of what they're doing because they're asleep and they don't recognise that someone else has to. And so, yeah, that all leads to uncertainty in terms of, is this really a problem? Is it my problem? There's still a lack of information out there, so that it's not really adequately taught at medical school, you know, to psychologists, nurses as well. It's not a part of the curriculum that it doesn't get the time it deserves in terms of education. And so, you know, most doctors don't routinely take sleep histories on their patients. And so in the vast majority of circumstances, inquiry as to how your day starts when you wake up and ends when you go to bed. It's just not a routine part of medicine as yet.
And you believe that it should be?
Oh, certainly. And that will happen gradually, but it's a big change to accept that snoring is a problem. When I was a child, I went to my grandmother's place. My uncle was making this horrendous noise, and I said, "What's that?" He said, "Oh, it's your uncle is asleep." And he said, and my grandmother, I can remember I was only young, she said, "And listen to that snoring. He's having a really good sleep."